Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape the community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
What does the future of climate disasters and mitigation look like in Wisconsin? Earlier this year, a group of UW-Milwaukee graduate students partnered with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources to find out. Their report, Rising Waters, Rising Costs, looked at how flooding has already impacted Wisconsin residents and what can be done. As a part of our Climate Solutions Week reporting, WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez spoke with the graduate students about the report. First, we'll hear from Milwaukee resident Tom Maddox about how he's been impacted by flooding.
How has this neighborhood changed as far as this bioswale? Like, what do you remember being here when you were in business all that time ago?
This here was just an open field, flat ground. They had said one time that this was going to be apartments put here, but ended up not apartments. And this used to be a park right here, and they taking the park away and put this factory here because they said that it would be people in the community would be employed at the factory, but I don't know how many people from the community works over there, but they took that park out of the community.
You know, one of the things we're looking at and talking to people about is flooding. Have you had flooding in your businesses or your house over the years?
I had flooding in my home 10, 11 years or so, somewhere around in that ballpark area. But yeah, my basement flooded real bad. Couldn't go down there no more before I made it to the bottom of the step because the water was just everywhere over there. And I called FEMA, whoever that was, came and they came and, you know, estimated did. And after, I think, a couple of days or so, the water did go down.
Did you have flood insurance at the time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I got paid, you know, for it. They paid me for my stuff, damage and stuff. But, you know, I'd rather not for it to be damaged because, you know, you get old stuff that you have that some of my grandparents' stuff that I had that, you know, you lose the water, get to it, so you can't recover that type of stuff, you know, sentimental values, you can't recover.
Are you all ready for your moment?
I think so.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll try my best. So my name is Evelyn. I was a second-year student at the School of Freshwater Sciences at UW-Milwaukee. And on the report, I worked on the green infrastructure solutions in Milwaukee.
Hi, I'm Cami Armendariz. I am going to be in my second year at UW-Milwaukee as a water policy master's student. And within the report, I was doing flood risk and socioeconomic data mapping.
How's it going? My name is Joe McCormick. I'm also a freshwater policy student at UWM. And in this report, I focused on the overlay of flood insurance with those socioeconomic indicators.
Can you tell me about the impact that flooding has in Wisconsin? What did you all learn about that?
Sure. I mean, flooding is the most common and most costly natural disaster in the state of Wisconsin. And with the effects of climate change, it's expected that more frequent and severe storms are going to increase the amount of flood damage that takes place. So municipalities around Wisconsin are working really hard to shore up their own mitigation techniques. But even if you have the best mitigation techniques, you know, there's still always going to be flood risk, which is why we try to emphasize the adoption of personal flood insurance policies.
What makes an area susceptible to like flood risk or flood damage?
In the city of Milwaukee, it's susceptible to flood damage because there's a lot of impervious surfaces here. And
so like looking around a neighborhood like this where you can see large buildings, abandoned manufacturing, a lot of hard surfaces, little trees. This would be like a pretty prime example of like impervious surfaces and susceptible to flooding.
Yep, exactly. And within this area, in our report, we looked at the socioeconomic indicators, but a lot of that is areas where it was all hardscape now because of the community and the history of the urbanization of people, I guess.
Socioeconomic mapping.
Yes.
What is it? Why does it matter? And what does it tell us about flooding and how to keep people not wet?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so FEMA has normally like been the historic kind of like landmark figure that delineates 100-year floodplains, which is kind of what Evelyn was just talking about. And these floodplains tend to have a lot of prior data mapped on them. It's what like local municipalities, other things are kind of relying on when they're trying to prepare for any flooding disasters that are going to happen. But then again, there's a lot of floodplains that aren't actually mapped by FEMA, or the ones that are mapped, just it's old data. It's not really focused on socioeconomic indicators. So there's a lot of things that could go wrong there where municipalities aren't really prepared. So a really important thing is not only to apply like ecological things when you're mapping for FEMA, but also applying in socioeconomic indicators. And that can range from like, okay, how many people have like diabetes in this area, to a large thing we focus on was like renters and things like that, because there's the ability to kind of recover from a big natural disaster changes like drastically whether you own your house or whether you're a renter, in terms of the if you got that insurance or anything. Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Harvey were excellent examples that we utilized in our report that really showed how much more renters suffered, and then especially Black and Hispanic populations in the area. So there was one really great project by Groundwork Milwaukee, and I'm forgetting their other partners they were working with, but they specifically focused on Milwaukee as their case study and outlined a ton of socioeconomic indicators, again, ranging from diabetes to how many people are in the household, income, and countless others. I highly recommend reading through their report.
If we're talking about renters, which the majority of Metcalf Park residents are renters, what are some of the insufficiencies when it comes to like flooding insurance, and then specifically dealing with renters?
Sure. So we talked earlier about flood zones. Flood zones delineate risk, and they're categorized from X to V, and each different region has a different level of risk. Things that are called SFHAs, or Special Flood Hazard Areas, SFHAs. Those are areas where you've got mortgage requirements to have flood insurance. So if you want to get a mortgage and you want it backed by the federal government, you need to have a flood insurance policy. And as a result, that's kind of the only regions where you see widespread adoption of flood insurance policies. There's currently no mandates for standard renters insurance to include flood insurance.
So why would they?
Exactly. And I think a lot of people don't understand their risks. There's been a lot of academic evidence to support the fact that people generally have really poor risk perception. They don't think it'll happen to them. And, you know, traditionally it's been expensive. So flood insurance historically has always been operated by these two levels. It's private, which is relatively new, and the FEMA National Flood Insurance Program, the NFIP. And the NFIP covers the entire nation, right? It's been around since 1968. It's extremely debt saddled due to these high extreme payout events like Katrina and Hurricane Andrew and Hurricane Ida. It's paying hundreds of millions of dollars every year just to pay off its own debt. And, you know, future federal funding looks a little grim. So that's where private insurance needs to step up and offer more customizable options with different price points based on risk. There's a lot more advanced modeling that allows for them to create these more nuanced policies. But as of now, I think there's just a large amount of unawareness about flood risk, about flood policy options, and about the financial devastation that can occur if a flood event happens at your house.
All right, Evelyn, I've got a question, because if we're talking about how do you serve like underserved, underinvested communities, I feel like 30th Street Corridor, this right here in front of us, is an example of that. So can you tell me a little bit about what you learned with the work with MMSD in the 30th Street Corridor?
Yeah, so MMSD is kind of targeting those underserved communities, and infrastructure is really costly to fix over time. So to kind of combat that and take like a better approach, they're also implementing green infrastructure such as bioswales. And those are large stormwater basins that help capture water where it falls and prevent water from going into those pipes and over flooding that system, because then that's going to lead to a sewer overflow, which then dumps a mixture of raw sewage and stormwater into Lake Michigan, which we don't want. So this is kind of preventing that from happening. So they kind of just reach out to underserved communities and tell them about the projects that are happening and make them familiar with what's being done in their community, and then also kind of give them strategies that they can help implement, such as small-scale green infrastructure, like rain barrels and rain gardens in their own homes, which they help provide and educate the community on as well.
What surprised you about your study and just going through the data and learning what you did?
for me at least when looking at the data, just like the extreme number of like flooding blind spots that are missed in mapping. There's like a lot of flood risk hot spots where like there's significant pluvial flooding, which just means that the drainage systems, again, like Evelyn mentioned earlier, are going to be overwhelmed and these areas are going to be heavily flooded and damaged. So looking at maps where you look at traditional FEMA mapping tools versus when you combine social vulnerability data, you'll see so many more communities that are going to be affected.
Yeah, and I guess I would just add to that, when you look at the insurance adoption, it similarly points to a lot of coverage gaps. FEMA data suggests the fact that over 80% of all residential NFIP policies are held by individual homeowners and not 2 to 4 family residences, which suggests a real lack of coverage for renters and people living in multiple unit buildings.
I'd say just learning about the 30th Street Corridor projects and the basins themselves was super interesting as I kind of focus on the green infrastructure. I believe the West Basin, which is the larger of the three, can capture up to 31 million gallons of water, which is just really hard to even picture in your mind, like how much water that is. So I think that's really neat and cool.
What I'm hoping this story gets to is like the solutions part of everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious if there are other parts of the solutions and the takeaways that you all highlighted or featured in the report.
For mine, for people themselves, would be just to look into, like, MMSC offers programs for rain barrels and rain gardens. Just finding out what resources there are for you as a person to try to capture water where it falls and install your own small-scale green infrastructure, because that will help capture water where it falls and prevent flooding and overwhelming of the sewer system.
You should get flood insurance. It's estimated that 1 inch of flood damage can cost $25,000 worth of damage. I don't think people quite understand their risk. I don't think people are fully aware of the financial devastation that can occur with an uninsured flood event. There's a lot of flexible flood insurance packages, and there's a lot of government relief programs that are worth looking into if you're currently uninsured. It's definitely worth exploring. Get flood insurance.
I would say for just organizations, government employees, other officials who are dealing with this and trying to find solutions, make sure you're communicating to the public in a very engaging way, creating visuals that are understandable to the public. Again, Groundwork Milwaukee made like an Esri story map. And if you look at it, the colors are beautiful. Just making something that the general public, someone who knows nothing about flood insurance, who doesn't know what any of these acronyms mean, they can get it and they'll want to keep reading it. So just make it science communication and make it good.
That was UWM School of Freshwater Science graduate students Cami Armendariz, Joe McCormick, and Evelyn Grimm, authors of the report Rising Water, Rising Costs. They spoke with WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez for our Climate Solutions Week reporting in partnership with NPR.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.